listener. Listening to Darling Shine, a podcast by myself, Elodie Pullen,
and me, Chloe Fisher.
A place where we ground womanhood's unspoken experiences from grief to fertility and everything in between.
Join us while we transform our pain into power, encompassing all emotions, ugly and beautiful. Darling Shine is your chosen family and your survival kit for the unexpected shit life throws at you.
Hello guys, welcome back to Darling Shine. You're getting stitched up again with just me today. Chloe isn't here, but I've got one of my mates, Josh Woody, here, who is actually one of Chump's oldest mates. And I feel like I just need to quickly retouch on that. So my partner, Chumpy Pullen, passed away 3 years ago, and he grew up with Josh Woody. And then we didn't know each other that well. But then since Chump passed away, like, I don't know, he always talked about how much of a legend you were, and I'm AJ. So bloody glad, yeah, you and AJ, your beautiful son. So welcome to Darling Chat. I'm so frothing that you're here.
No, we finally made it happen.
Yeah, because you have such an amazing story. You've overcome so much, which we're going to get into, obviously. And Chump always just spoke so highly of you, and you did a bunch of stuff with Red Bull together. And I remember he'd always go away and come back and be like, fuck, I got to see Woody, and it was just so sick, and he's the best, and I can't wait for you to meet him. And then, like, you moved up here, what, maybe a year ago now?
9 months, AJ and I moved up.
Yeah.
So it's been a whirlwind. I think finally, you know, I'm in a place where I'm ready to tell my story, and I can't think of any better person to reshare my story with than you. And obviously I think old mate upstairs might have had a bit of pull on that, considering what happened yesterday when I literally said out loud, I'm finally ready to tell my story. And then at 11:11, half an hour later, you...
Was it 11:11? You forgot that part.
Yeah.
Wow. So Woody was having a chat with his mum, and his mum's like, you got to put yourself back out there and start telling your story. Because you used to do a fair bit of keynote speaking.
Yep.
And then you kind of just stopped. You went through a lot. And so that is so funny yesterday that you had that chat with your mum.
Literally.
And then I randomly messaged you saying, you're coming on the podcast, can we chat tomorrow? Yeah.
Well, because we were going to do it last year, remember? And then it was just hectic leading into Christmas. And I honestly, even though it was only 3-4 months ago when initially you said you need to get me on here, so much has shifted in my mental space that, like, I'm definitely ready now to share it. And I can't think of anyone better than you to share it, because we have a massive person upstairs that's bonded us. And as you said, like, we didn't get to know each other till after Chump.
Crazy,
especially because of COVID, like, I couldn't leave Melbourne, I couldn't do anything. So obviously when Chump passed, that was smack bang in the middle of all the bullshit, and no one could go anywhere. So couldn't even see Chris and Sal.
Yeah, Chris and Sal are Chump's parents. So you grew up in Mansfield. You kids were like, you were a bit older
Fair
than
bit
Chump.
Older.
And I remember he would tell me that he looked up to you as like this snowboarding legend of Mansfield. Like, you were one of the older, like, rebellious kids.
Yeah.
So let's get into what happened to you back when you were 18, right?
Yeah. So I grew up in Mansfield. I moved there a little bit late primary school. I was a big skiing family with my mum and dad, and I was excited to move to Mansfield. I lived up there with dad. Mum stayed in Melbourne because she had a really good job, a corporate job, so she could continue to our farm to, like, keep going, because we had a huge farm up there. And, yeah, that's how I got to know Chump and Chris and Sal. Their pull and skate hub was the best shop. And Chris brought these things in that look like these weird flat decks. And I'm like, what's that? And he's like, oh, these are snowboards. These are the new cool things.
So it wasn't a thing back then?
No. Whoa. No, that's how old we are.
What?
It was like 90.
How old are you?
I'm 42 now.
Fuck, yeah. So weird that snowboarding really only came into gear, like, what, 25 years ago?
It was 92 when I first started riding.
Shit, that's when I was born.
So I don't even know, how old would Chump be? Like, I don't even remember the gap of me and Chump, but I remember just...
He's 5 years older than me, so...
Yeah, well, let's not do maths. We're not going to do that.
So he yeah, fuck, he would have been... If you were 10, he would have been 5.
Yeah, so, yeah, I just remember Chump sort of... To be honest, like, back then, like, because he was so much younger, I mean, sometimes that age, 5 years is a massive gap.
Yeah.
So I just remember Chump running around, and he was always just this little kid that was like, fuck, this kid lives a life. He gets to ski. And because obviously they do school, was it through winter? And then they'd, remember they used to go around the boats?
Yeah.
So they'd leave it like X amount of time through the year where Chris and Sal would pack the kids up and
the family would hustle so hard through winter, make all their money.
Work
like
so hard.
At the ski hire, they would just never fucking sleep for the whole of winter because Mansfield's like the snow town of Mount Buller and then like held touristy in winter. And then they'd save up all that money and go like either
take
buy
off.
A boat and just take off for summer doing boat stuff and then like sell it at the end of the season, like shit like that. They were just they just had such a crazy fun, like zest for adventure as a family.
And even on top of being that busy, Chris and Sal always had time for us little rat bags.
So cool.
Like Chris, I think it was like on a Wednesday night, he'd shut the shop and open up the ski tech center and he'd teach us about the snowboards and how to fix them and how to set your boards up, wax them, do the edges. And, you know, that's stuff that you don't forget. And then when I ran into Chump, however long it was, like 15 years later, and we ran into each other, and when he said what he said about us being the ones that he looked up to, I'm like, that's wild, because like we had no idea what we were doing back then. You know, it was such a fresh sport. We were just like, we used to have to jump off the aerial ski jumps because we didn't know how to build jumps for snowboards back then. That's how old it was.
Holy
shit. Sorry, how new it was, but how old we are.
So then one day you built a really fucked up big jump. What happened?
So I'd just finished high school somehow. Convinced me to at least finish year 12. Then 18, the world's my oyster. So originally I was going to toss up between going back to motocross or just travel and snowboard, and I was sort of a bit back and forth. And then I thought I'd just give snowboarding one last chance. And I built a jump across a road that I think we measured it out. It was between 75 to 85 feet across a road.
Jesus.
And 90% of that was the asphalt. So, like, there was no room for error, which to me, I think I was just – it was like a blind faith. I just
– But you were always a daredevil, eh?
Yeah, I was, but I was a bit of a pussy the first few years. And then, like, the last year I was like, fuck it, I'm going to be that guy that just does it.
And your friends were egging you on.
No, my friends were the opposite. They were like, don't do it. Because it was dumb.
Shit.
Like now you look at it as an adult and like, what the fuck was I thinking? But
did your mum know you were going to go do this? You didn't tell her.
So long story short, we built the jump across the road. And as I approached it, because of the way it was set up, I couldn't do a practice jump off it. I couldn't do a speed test. So like basically the first time I hit it was
the time.
So I just committed to hitting it as hard as I could. But as soon as I hit the transition, I felt my front of my snowboard bend backwards and literally nearly hit my leg.
Oh,
so I basically I hit a brick wall and I just went, I'm fucked. And I just flipped upside down and I just traveled across the road upside down, but I lost over half of my speed. So
oh my God.
I just saw the gutter and I'm like, all right, I'm going to hit that. And it was like it wasn't like a proper gutter you see on the streets. It's like obviously a gutter that's like a trough.
Like a curvy one.
And I just remember just as I hit that, I just tucked my head and just went limp because I knew I didn't want to hit the ground hard. Mm. One thing I was good at was crashing. So
Do
I just
think
went.
That saved you?
Yeah. Because I just, this voice in my head said, trust us, you're going to be fine.
Are you serious?
And
when you went in the air?
When I was in the air and then just as I hit the road, I tucked my head and just went relaxed. And landed on the back of my neck, which is C7. So if you lean forward, there's a bone that pokes out. That's C7. That took the whole force of the hit. And my body compressed on itself. And that's when I heard my neck snap. And then when I bounced, my head went backwards. And that's when I heard the explosion of the bones all disintegrating. It was like a gunshot going off in my throat. Fast forward. Sorry, I'm trying to speed it up so I don't get stuck
on
it.
Don't speed it up.
So I was awake.
Do you remember just lying there?
So I don't know if you've ever had a hard hit, but you have that ringing noise in your ears and it's like, and everything's quiet and I'm like, okay, I'm alive.
And you could feel the
pain.
No,
I couldn't feel anything. I felt like my neck had snapped through my throat. That's what it felt like. And I actually thought I was laying there with my neck through my throat. And then I heard my mates running and screaming. I could hear their boots, the snowboard boots on the asphalt running. And at the time, I was one of the eldest ones there. So, like, my mates were all 18, 17. Dingo, he was only 14, and he was the one that had to hold my head. Straight away, I said, I've snapped my neck, don't touch me. So the boys, I was on my side, but my neck was straight, but my head was twisted.
What
I was told later on.
And you still stayed in that position?
No, I just stayed in that position. I knew I couldn't move. There was just a message in my head said, do not move a muscle. Like, if you have any recovery, you need to not move. And so I just laid there, which is hard because your neck starts spasming. So my head was like wobbling. So that's when Dingo held my head to keep it from moving. Because I said, I've snapped my neck. I can't let it move.
Oh, my God.
And he was like 14, 15 at the time.
Your friends would have just been like, what the fuck?
That's probably one of the hardest things it took for me to get over, was what I did to my mates. It wasn't the physical shit. Like, I did that to myself. What it put my family and mates through was what was the hardest.
But seeing a mate nearly die, that just bonds you.
But I didn't realise how fucked I was until they finally got to me and they put the stretch. So I had to lay there for about half an hour because they thought it was a car accident because they heard it was on a road. So they just automatically assumed it was a car accident. So Ski Patrol had to get all the shit down to me. Yeah. And then when they put me on the stretcher, my arm fell off the stretcher and I thought I'd torn my shoulder. And then when my mate put my hand up, my arm kept slipping off. And that's when I realised I was paralysed from the neck down. And then when they moved my boot, my legs, I had all black gear on but green and gold boots. So when they put my boots up, I'm like, have I cut myself in half? Like,
why can't I feel that? Because you couldn't feel a thing.
No. And so then they rushed me to emergency. I overheard the doctor saying, look, this kid's not going to survive an ambulance. He may survive the helicopter. Let's just do the helicopter. So they couldn't put me under, so they had to gavage me while I was awake. So they had to put a breathing tube down my throat, which was hard enough because, like, you just automatically gag. And so they shoved that down my throat and then they made me put one down my nose and I had to sniff. And every time I sniffed, the piece of bone I could feel grinding in my neck. So it sounded like sand. And that's when I kind of passed out after that. And then... Then the next thing I woke up to being...
How many days later?
No, I came... I remember the cold air hitting my face, so I had to shut off the whole mountain to get the helicopter in because a massive storm came in. So they had to shut the whole of Bourke Street off to let the helicopter land because there was nowhere else for it to land. And I remember I'm like, oh, just let me out. I'll just walk across. And they're like, you're never going to walk again. Like, you're...
Let me out. I'll just walk.
Yeah. I had no clue at that. It's weird because I had a clue, but then I was in denial.
Yeah, of course you are.
And then.
And you don't want to, like, you're kind of just testing, like, what's really wrong. So you're like, I'll just walk. Yeah, and you're just waiting for them to tell walking, you mate. What's up. I mean, I've hit my back. You don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I've hit my back heaps. I broke my back in Switzerland 2 years before that. So Mum got the phone call. She'd just flown in from a red eye from Perth that morning. And then my best mate, Daniel, rang Mum. On the road, literally 5 seconds after I'd had the accident, because I said, call Mum, she'll know what to do.
Yeah.
And Mum's always fix everything.
Oh, imagine your mum getting that call.
Yeah. And so Mum and so Dad beautiful. And my brother and some family members were waiting for me at the Austin Hospital. And I saw the fear in my parents' eyes and I just started joking about stuff. I'm like, oh, I've sort of been dating 3 different girls, not properly, but, you know, I was 18 and I said, can you make sure they don't come in at the same time? And Mum and Dad are like, oh, that's what he's worried about. He's not that bad. And
oh, my God, that's so funny that mum, that's what you're thinking about. Bring them all in at the same time. All I thought was a cat fight. Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not worth cut fighting over now. I'm pretty much smashed. But
my God.
Mum turned to my surgeon and said, see, he's not that bad. And the surgeon turned to Mum and said, if he survives the next 3 days, he's lucky. They said, your son's dying. And even joking, yeah. So speed it up a bit. What they do is they cut my throat from here to here. They remove everything. They get a chisel and a hammer and knock out a chunk out of my bone, out of my hip. Then they turn that into like a paste, like a putty.
That's
they
fucking
They clear
wild.
Everything out of my throat. And then they put a plate and then they rebuild my neck. And, you know.
I can't believe they can do that.
Surgeons and doctors are amazing at mending, but I realised very quickly that they weren't good at healing. So I was categorised a C5, C6, C7, T1, complete quadriplegic. And that was my new label. I wasn't Josh Wood anymore, 18-year-old kid. I was Josh Wood, the quadriplegic. I was admitted as a complete quad. So complete means that the injury is so severe that there's no messages from your brain to your feet.
Oh, my gosh.
Incomplete means that the cord's been squashed, but it hasn't been severed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So my cord had been stretched because my neck went in and out and my head flung backwards. So my cord got stretched and it got compressed by the bone, but it hadn't actually
been severed.
I think from memory, and don't quote me because it's been 24 years since my accident, a piece of bone had gone into the canal and literally touched the cord, but not enough to completely sever through it. And they got that out. So the only props I will probably give doctors is the job that they did help set me up for my recovery. But I realized really quickly that Western medicine wasn't going to be the answer for me. And that's when my mum's friend was probably one of the most renowned psychics in Australia. And she called Rose straight away and Rose said, "I just see darkness. I'm not giving any messages right now." So then that was that. And straight away I just said to mum, I don't want to live like this. And the story's been told so many times that, you know, I wanted to die. And if I had have had a button, I would have pressed it. I wouldn't have anything that I have now because I would have just pressed the button because of what these people told me.
You hear this a lot of times, like doctors saying you're never going to walk again, and then like look at you, you're walking, you've got a stick, but you're walking. Like, how the fuck does the hope? How do they just give you no hope?
Like, I mean, they have it. They call it duty of care, so they can't give you false hope. I get that, but then you can't take hope away from people anyway. Yeah. They can say, look, the chances of you walking again are very slim, or any type of recovery with your limbs. But when you're told that that's your life, you think that who's going to want me in a wheelchair? I'm 18 years old. I can't move my arms and legs. I can't shit. I can't piss. Am I ever going to be able to have sex? Am I ever going to have a child? Am I ever going to, like, all these things at 18.
Fresh out of school.
And then after about 3 days, not to get too much information, but I realized quite quickly if I can have sex, I probably can, because I was laying in bed naked. Oh. And I'm like, because I had a catheter, and I'll say it to you because you don't give a shit. I had a catheter in, and then the next thing, like, I could feel this pulling sensation. It was absolutely killing. I'm like, my God, what's hurting? I said to my mum and my mates, my dick's hurting. It's hurting. Like, oh, it's okay, mate. You're fine. And then I looked down and
fucking oath.
What happened was the catheter was getting pulled out of my bladder. And so that was kind of a tiny relief. But I know it sounds funny, but what it did was it made me realize that there are messages going south.
Yes.
South of my injury. And then I was told the grim news and asked mum to kill me and all that stuff. And then it was the next day I woke up and I just had this message: you need to take responsibility of what you've done and let's start working alternative therapies, which is all stuff like all the woo-woo stuff that I never believed in. And it was all energy work. So using psychic healers, using psychics, using chi energy, learning about chakras.
Really? And they came into the hospital, these healers?
So my mum's best friend Rose, her daughter-in-law's name was Zara, or his name is Zara, and she was a psychic healer. So she works through guides and she uses spirits and angels to help her guide her through what she's doing. I also had my chiropractor who had been working on me for 2 years prior that had helped fix my back. His last words to me 3 days before I broke my neck was, "Your back's the best it's ever been. Go out and have fun." And then I broke my neck 3 days later.
Shut up.
So we brought him in. Then a few days later, Rose came in. And then what Rose would do, she'd talk to Simon, my chiropractor, and say, "This is what's wrong and this is how we can fix it." So Simon never did manipulation on me. He'd just, like, touch different parts. He'd get the spiral wheel out, and, like, see where I was getting any type of connection. And then he'd touch my head because that's the only thing I could feel, and then he'd touch my hand. He'd go, "Would that feel the same?" I'm like, "No." So he'd work until he found a patch that I could feel.
Yeah.
And then I started connecting that feeling to that, and then I started learning visualization. And then Zara used to work on me, and this is the first time I've actually ever told anyone this on a public forum.
Because I've not heard all the energy healing part to your story at all.
Well, because it's a lot, and I know you can handle it, but a majority of the world has dismissed what I went through, so I just shut up talking about it.
There's something you can't dismiss when this is such a, like, you snapped your neck. And it's like so medical. Like most people just immediately think this is completely beyond some spiritual woo-woo shit.
And the thing is, like, and I want to reiterate this, it doesn't mean because it worked on me, it's going to work on everyone. But wouldn't you rather try? And the thing is, you can't lay there and get people to work on you and expect them to fix you. You have to, the way I look at it, you have to believe that what they are doing is fixing you. And like, I remember Zara used to work on me. She wasn't touching me. And she'd have her finger behind the back of my head and I could feel which direction she'd be spinning her fingers.
This is just, is this not the epitome of mind over matter?
100%. And that's the thing. I've been dismissed. I've been shut down saying I was one of the lucky ones. I was this. I'll show anyone my spinal cord injury and what it looks like now. And I guarantee you, I don't have much money, but I'd put every single cent I have on it. If you gave the top surgeon in the world my MRI, I guarantee you I know exactly what they'd say and it wouldn't be me walking.
Yeah.
And that's where I believe in what I went through, and I feel like now I'm at a different place in my life where I'm like, well, fuck it, I don't care if no one believes me because I know what I went through. I know what I went through as a child. I didn't believe in this shit. But when I saw the Western medicine turn their back on me and categorize me, where Eastern medicine was like, let's just try. That's all I needed.
How can you deny that? Like, you're walking.
And so Zara would work on me. She'd say, your chakras are going this way and they're not spinning that way. I'm like, I know what the fuck that means. What do I need to do? She goes, just let me do the work. And I literally used to feel her. She used to stand behind the back of my head and I could feel her energy. It was almost like she was pulling back a wheel and then she'd go bang like that with her hand and then it would start spinning and I'd feel all these things and then I'd get this rush to my legs.
Whoa.
And then for 2 weeks I stared at my big toe because I figured if I could move my big toe, then why can't I work my way back?
Because it's the furthest thing away.
Exactly. And so that's when I focused on that. And then it wasn't until – so she worked on me twice a week. Mum would have to smuggle her in as my auntie and then we'd pull the blinds around. Another big thing I did was I got my snowboard in.
Doctors must have hated
it. Oh, they fucking hated us. They hated my mum. And my mum's like, what are you going to do? You're going to arrest this?
Yeah.
And I had photos everywhere because I needed my mind to escape. I got my mum to bring my motocross gear and helmet in so I could smell dirt and fuel because it let my brain escape the hospital. Because you're stuck in a stale environment. Yeah. You've got people crying and screaming all night. You don't sleep. You're laying there naked in the middle of the night with hundreds of other people. And I'm like, someone could come in here and rob me, stab me, set me on fire. I can't move. I'm laying here naked. So you're awake
all night. You feel so vulnerable.
The most vulnerable you'll ever be.
Needed that extra stimulus to like get you feeling motivated and inspired, like I can be beyond these fucking four walls.
Well, that's why I twisted it and used that vulnerability as a motivation to get better. This is the thing that I've probably told 10 people in my life this because it's a lot for people to get their head around, but I know what I saw and felt. And I remember one time I was laying there and Zara was not touching me, but I could feel her fingers going into each side of my traps, the lats, whatever the part this is, and I just felt these giant black wings just come over the top of me and wrap around me.
Are you serious?
And it was the same feeling I had when I hit the road and I realised that there was these big giant
someone's angels protecting you,
looking after me and working on me with Zara. And I get choked up because I haven't talked about this a lot. And that's she went home that night. And she had burn marks from her top of her shoulders through to her tips of her fingers.
Zara did.
And what had happened is that my guides and her guides were working through her to get to me. And it wasn't until 2 years later I saw another therapist And he said, oh, you had a halo. I went, no, I didn't. So a halo is when they bolt two bolts to your head and it goes down into your shoulders. I said, no, I never had a halo. And he said, oh, I can see the marks on top of your shoulders. They're like holes or a burn mark. I said, oh, that's where my healer used to work through me. And he just, he went white and he started praying. He was French.
Whoa. And he started. I'm actually goosebumps. Yeah.
This is what I was excited to talk to, because it's not something I've, sorry, I keep hitting it. It's not something I've talked about to a lot of people, but I know what I went through. I know what I saw. I know what she went through. I remember feeling my body just like,
whoa.
Like I've done 5-MeO-DMT with shamans in America. Like the way I looked at it, I was going to kick over every single stone that was in front of me because I didn't know what my next answer was going to be. And that's what kept me motivated and that's what kept me going. And that's what led me to the recovery that they still can't explain. And, you know, like I went through a lot of shit. Like I remember one time they said I was going to go into an auditorium in front of all future surgeons and doctors to show what my recovery was. And I went in a suit. I was really proud of it. And I thought I was going to get to talk. And they told me to take all my clothes off. They put me in a gown. They shoved me on a bed. They dragged me out into an auditorium in front of probably about 60 or 80 students and used me as a guinea pig.
So you didn't even get to talk like about
how. No, they basically said, look at this spastic response, and they moved my legs around and my arms would spasm and then they'd tickle my feet because they used to do a test. If they rub their hand or finger underneath the foot, if your toes curled down, it meant that there was no message. It was like a spastic response. But if your toes opened, it meant that there was a message. And so my toes used to open. And they did that in front of all these people and used me as a guinea pig. And then basically spat me back out. And I'm like.
And you just wanted to shout at the rooftops, hey, all you doctors.
It's not about telling people everyone's going to walk. Like Mum and I have helped and mentored hundreds of people with spinal cord injuries. And I always say, just because it worked for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you.
Yeah.
But at least try. And if it doesn't work, come back to it a year or two later. But wouldn't you rather try everything than not? And that's sort of where the public speaking came about. But I never really talked about this stuff in my talks because it is a lot. But I feel like with you and your audience, they can handle it.
It's the mind over matter. Like getting told you'll never be able to do something and then like going after it and overcoming that is so – it translates across like to corporates, to everything, that people have these fears. And like you can get through things that you just feel like you hear that is impossible. It's nothing is clearly impossible, and you did so much keynote speaking, and I don't know why you stopped, man. You're so good at speaking, and this is such a crazy, amazing message.
I think like Barney and Kate are a perfect example. You know,
we've got mutual friends,
Barney and Kate, and so Barney didn't do anything for 10 years, and then he met Kate. And she gave him the motivation and he started getting improvement after 10 years. I'm still getting things back after 24 years. And I push it that I'm not saying that this is going to work for you, but don't not try. And that's where I've tried to push with my recovery and stuff like that. And that's when now I look at – so I stopped doing my talks because I got burnt out and all I was known was for Josh, who broke his neck and learned to walk again. But with that came a lot of people – discrediting what I'd done, people saying that it was bullshit, people saying, no, that can't happen, no, you're one of the lucky ones, you were, like, I know I'm fortunate, I'm not lucky, I'm fortunate, and I don't take for granted what I've got. But I got burnt out from those talks and doing the mentoring, and then I wanted a new challenge after AJ was born, and I wanted to make more regular money, so I got into earth moving, and then that's when the marriage fell apart. Everything just changed after that. AJ was about 2. I got a job, a big job in the big tier one projects in Melbourne doing the tunnels. And I was like, fuck, I'm on $2,000, $3,000 a week. Like, I'm just going to keep doing this. I'm like 10, 12 hours on my feet. You know, I was walking in three tier scaffold into the bottom of a tunnel in the middle of winter at 5 o'clock in the morning. And
which is crazy. To like crazy behavior from someone who's like technically you're disabled, right?
Yeah. Enabled, not disabled. I always say it as a joke just to take the piss. But yeah, I've got a pass on my car that proves that I've got it.
Wow.
But,
And your like co-workers looked at you like, what are you doing here? But you were working just as hard as them.
Right? I think some of them, I got treated, people deny it, but I got treated like I didn't deserve to be there. I shouldn't be there. And then I was also treated like, this is fucking nuts that you're doing this. Like you could be sitting at home on a couch, but you're with us at 5 o'clock in the morning in the middle of winter in a tunnel.
Amazing. And in a not workplace is supposed to be diverse in that they're letting, like they're like.
Yeah, they are. Trying. It's sort of, there is a lot of cliques too, and they'll deny the cliques, but I saw it firsthand and I hadn't gone through all this to not see the belief in myself, but when people treat you like you don't necessarily deserve to be there, you start believing it in yourself. And then by the end of it, I was burnt out and I spoke to you about it. After everything I'd been through, I'd never had depression. And by the second and a half year into that job, I had depression. One of it was because I was questioning myself, and also I was missing out on all this life with my son. I'd lost my family. In the 5 years that I've been separated from his mum, I'd had two relationships since then, and those both turned pretty shit by the end very quickly. And so by the end of my time working, I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I'm making $3,000 a week and I'm depressed. I've got no money because I'm spending it. I've been on a disability pension most of my life. And that's when I decided, fuck it, I'm done. I'm going to change my life with my son. Our families supported it. And that's when I made the challenge to move to Goldie with AJ with no support. Now, I've got obviously support from my mum and my auntie, but, you know, we've got heaps of friends. We've got you guys up here. But as you know, family are normally a big pinnacle to help you with kids and stuff like that. Your friends will always be there. And, yeah, it hasn't been easy. But I'll tell you what, my headspace, especially in the last few months, especially the last few weeks, I was lucky enough to find a really nice place, and we ended up having the most incredible neighbour who she's actually ended up turning out once we got to know her. She's a healer and she's been working on me lately, and fuck, the breakthroughs that we've had. Like last time I saw you just before Christmas. I was in a lot of pain, and like I wasn't just going through mental shit. My body was falling apart. A few times I was rushed to hospital, which AJ only found out about it, but like I'd get rushed to hospital, I'd get out that night and I'd go to work the next day.
Oh man.
And then I'd deal with people treating me like I didn't belong or that I was a less of a person just because I can't walk straight.
Oh, and they don't understand what you've been through and how incredible and amazing it is that you're even fucking turning up to a job. You do not have to, like, yeah. That you could easily not be doing. And you're just like literally making the impossible possible.
Yeah. And I've got a little man like to watch me.
Yeah.
I've got a little man that I'm trying to bring up in this world that you have to believe in yourself. And when I was depressed and upset and emo about everything, and I'm like, oh, but I'm making this money. And then I realized
it's not, I don't give a fuck
about the money. I'd rather be broke and happy. I'd rather be stressed and broke than depressed and have money.
Yeah, and be hanging with your kid. You never get those moments back.
Yeah, and you understand that more than anyone.
Fuck being stressed, getting paid the money but being bullied at work and being so tired and having no time for AJ.
Like, yeah, I think the biggest thing was my health, watching myself. I was at a point at my best where I didn't have a walking stick anymore.
Wow.
And I walked around Las Vegas. I went to the Supercross. I walked around California. I had no walking stick for 18 months and then my knee finally gave up. And then AJ was born, and then obviously that took priority. So my health kind of took a back seat. And as I said, you know, there were some times where I came out of emergency hospital at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd go home, have a sleep, and then get up and go back to work. And no one knew. My mum knew. What? My mum and auntie were always knew. Like, AJ didn't even know. Luckily, I don't know how, but every time I fell apart was when AJ wasn't home.
Yeah, because you crumble. It's like you probably were just so focused on holding it together for him that your body just broke down when he left.
Yeah. Oh, it just, as you would understand with Minnie, like they're your strength to keep fighting. Like everything that you guys have been through.
Yeah.
You know, like what our kids teach us, and being a single parent, being a mum dad at the same time. And like, I love it. I love doing the lunches and taking him to school. And you don't realize how quickly 6 hours goes quick, like when you're trying to do other shit. But like, to pick my boy up after school and to just have that time, because one thing I've learned is you cannot get time back. And I was like, fuck it, I'd rather have no money and go back on a pension. As much as I don't want to, at the moment that's my only option, because I'm sick of missing time with my boy.
Yeah, fucking, you'll never regret that.
And here's the reason, like, here's what makes the cold, dark, scary nights, lonely nights, questioning yourself, questioning whether you want to live, worth it. And I look at him and I'm like, if I had a button back in 2000, I would have pressed it. I would not only have the friendships I have, I wouldn't have my boy. My boy wouldn't be in my life. I would be dead. And so I constantly remind myself that I have a lot to be grateful for. And, yeah, I know I physically don't have the body that I had when I was 18, but I've got too many friends that have gone through similar injuries that would love to have my issues. So the way I look at it is that my nightmares are someone else's dream. And so I need to remind myself that I can't be a victim or be upset. I need to drive for myself, and I need to drive for my son. And having friends like you that support me and pushing me to get back into my speaking, get my book done again.
Yes.
I didn't believe in myself until a few months ago again. And that was really hard to, like, even when you were telling me at Chumpy's Gala, the first one, and then you asked me to speak and I go up after you and Chris and I'm like, how the fuck am I going to pull this? And then, but you know, like, I didn't believe in myself even when you were telling me I did a great job. And even when last time we caught up at the market and you said, you need to get back in your talks, you need to do your book again. I'm like, yeah, I know, but I don't know. I don't believe in myself. And literally in the last 2 weeks, I had that shift. And then when Mum spoke to me last night and said, your story isn't just about your accident anymore, it's about being a dad. Mm-hmm. And then literally I hung up and said, all right, I'm ready to tell my story again. And then you messaged me at 11:11.
No, your story is like, the proof is literally in the pudding when you look at you, and your spiel is like, you're so powerful when you're speaking and it's so true to you. And like, you just literally smack me in the face with like, wow, life is short, and you put everything into perspective.
Yeah, thank you.
And you have so, you fucking inspire me so much, Josh, like honestly. And it's so true when you say like, yeah, when you think you're the victim, your life is like another man's complete dream. It's so true.
And I think that I learned a lot from you and what you went through. And that's why I have so much respect for you, because there's not many couples you see that you think truly belong with each other. And when you saw you two together, it was like, fuck, that's like actual goals. Even when you're in a relationship, you're like, and you know, like to see the way you carried yourself through it. And I know that most of us never got to see the shit that you went through on your own, but how you handle it, how Chris and Sel handle it, how all your friends handled it, and then for Minnie to come along is like such an inspiration for me to come out of my shell again and figure more. Even though our stories are completely different, they're trauma based. Yeah. And realistically, most of us have a lot of trauma we don't know how to fix. And I think that, you know, one thing and why I've kept staying up here, and luckily I've had, you know, I'm 42 and my mum's helping me pay rent. And I'm like, I could focus on being depressed about that, or I could think, well, hang on, no, that means my mum and my family believe in me to be up here. And when I see, you know, AJ with my mates who are some of the top writers in the world.
Yeah.
And it's not about him being with famous people, it's him being around people that
are inspiring.
Inspiring, but they like watching them hit their goals and targets and hurt themselves and get back up and get back up and get back up. Because that's what life is. It's,
yeah.
Life's not here to help you. It makes you tough by being tough, and that is by repetition. And, you know, having people believe in me to get to this point now where I'm starting to believe in myself again, I know that that's going to make my son proud, but then also make my family proud that they didn't give up either.
HA will just be so proud of you. And Chumpy, I feel like he's sitting with us. Like, I think it's crazy that you and me chat and we're mates and we're bonding over this. He used to tell me about you, and you were the guy that sat in the hospital and looked at your big toe for 2 weeks and everyone said it's never going to move, and you fucking moved it, and then you're walking. Like, yeah. He always told me just how crazy and inspiring and amazing you were, and he really looked up to you. And the fact that we're mates, I'm so honoured, and I can't believe. Like, you need to keep telling this story. You need to tell it more.
I think I need to get my confidence back with it. I think I'm definitely ready now. I think for me, it's more also being that dad, because there's so many fucking incredible dads that have had their kids taken from them and they don't get to see them because of crap. Yeah. And I've had so many dads in that position tell me, they don't even say I'm lucky. They say, I love the way you are a dad. It inspires me for when I get to finally see my kid again. Yeah. But I've also have a lot of mums write to me and say, I'm doing this on my own. I'm a mum dad.
It's fucking and, hard.
And so I think that when you have support from people you don't know, and then you have support from people that you do know, like yourself, and then even my neighbour Chrissy, the way she's pulled me out of this hole, like, I'm so grateful to have her. And using this energy healing is so huge that I feel like telling my story again will hopefully put a spotlight on that kind of healing as opposed to the normal physio OT, because that does help, but I feel like you really have to internalise your healing.
And you have first. To want to heal.
You have to want to heal. You have to want to believe it. And that's with life anyway. It's like, I know that you wanted to be happy again. You wanted to have a life again. You didn't want to stay traumatized. You would have had some dark moments where absolutely. You felt like not getting out of a hole.
Oh, 100%. You definitely have those really dark thoughts, like you said. And then you're like, you know what? I'm fucking someone. Like, this is now our greatest challenge to be more, overcome this, do better. Like, get through this somehow. And like,
we can't go on through this trauma just to let the trauma win our lives. And, you know, like, even it's crazy, like, how many people follow Yours and Close podcast. Like, I've got mates that are like 19, 20 year old wakeboarder kids that follow you guys because they just love the way you live life. They've got nothing to do with being women.
Wakeboard.
You know, but I'm saying, like, your story and the way you guys tell stories and your life and how you approach life. It's not a small amount of people. It's such a huge demographic that
everyone goes through shit, and I think we just keep ourselves so, like, just obviously so relatable. Like, it would just the next person be going through some heavy shit and just actually talking about it. A lot of people don't talk about it, and just encourages other people to open up.
And I think like with you girls, you give that safe space where you let people just be you. You know, my hardest thing in the depression was not necessarily just from my work, but it was when AJ disclosed to me that he was in an abusive house at two and a half to four and a half. And that shattered my world, because I had no idea that he was seeing violence and he was hurt and he was mentally targeted by a piece of shit human.
And you didn't hear about that for years later.
Not until he was like 2.5 years ago when he told me. And, you know, that was hard. And that, as a father, you're like, what didn't I do? You know, like, I saw the signs, but I had to trust that he was safe. And then when I found out that he wasn't, like, that shattered me. And that's why also I love being up here, because when I see him around you guys, when I see him around the boys at the motocross track or the freestyle compound, or being with Cooper and being an ambassador for Cooper, you know, my kid's around the right people.
Yeah,
he needs to know that that's not normal. That's not normal behaviour. No. And I didn't realise how much it shattered me until I came up here and started healing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I cried for the first year every night.
After you found out?
After he told me, every night for the first year I cried, every night. Oh. I think the most I slept for the first year and a half, 2 years, was probably 3 or 4 hours a night. But there's so many other kids going through worse. But, like, how I'm trying to heal him is by energy work.
Yes. Is it kind of taking to him?
Yeah. Like, he's starting to believe in himself. Like, he's starting to do crazy shit again. Like, he didn't believe in himself. You'd put him in front of anything, he'd jump off it, he'd climb everything. And then it's not until recently I've realised how much that person debilitated my child to believe in himself, even having me as a father. And now we've been doing this energy work on him. He's starting to
come back out of
his shell. And even Chrissy said, she goes, oh, you can see him. You can feel his energy. It's getting bold. Oh, it's getting.
He's getting his confidence back. Yeah.
And you know him. He's full of fucking confidence, but it's a different type of confidence.
Yeah.
And
oh, bless AJ. I love him.
Yeah. Him, I still have this funny vision. I know they hang out a bit, but like when him and Minnie were laying down in the middle of fucking Burley Street.
Minnie chucked a tantrum in the middle of Burley Street and just like lied down on the floor. So AJ just went and lied next to her.
Or like when AJ was on your, I remember when we went to your place a few months ago and I said, please, AJ, do not fuck anything up at Al's house. And he goes, I know it's because he calls you the bougie girls, obviously.
The bougie girls, that's so funny.
Little bougies, mini.
We are not bougie.
Yeah, but you know how you like how you always wear the cool shit. And so anyway, I go, please do not fuck anything up at Al's place. And then literally, what was it, 5 or 10 minutes? You sit on the couch with one of Minnie's squishy things. And then I see him, he goes, oh, this broke. And I go, where did it break? Oh, just on the couch. It's okay. I got it off my clothes. I'm like, where was it? He goes, I sat on it by accident and it was like bright green or pink.
Fuck, it was
on your
like
white
a
couch. I was like, I could die right now.
Oh, mate. Nah, your mum came over that night too. She's so beautiful.
Oh, mum loves you. And I think the key to it is just having the right people around you and the right structures. And I feel like being up here, having you guys in our life, which we're so lucky to have. And, you know, I know how much not having Chump around still affects AJ. And, like, he always loved it when Chump would write to him on his Instagram and say,
kill
it. Like, he'd talk to, Chump knew it was, I was running the page, but he'd talk to AJ and go, killing it, bros, and all this shit.
He would tell me about how cool AJ was and be like, I hope we have a kid like AJ. Like, he's such a little legend.
Look at what you got.
Such a little firecracker. Oh, and Minnie's, yeah, she's full on too, both of them. They've both just got big, big, big personalities. And that's the best.
But they changed lives without realizing. Like you see them walk down the street. I don't know whether they're our kids, but you notice it. You notice
they've
people
got an
stop
energy
and go,
about them.
Oh, that kid like is different.
Yeah. I have people say, wow, like this little girl's been here before.
Yeah.
Like she's got something going on. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's funny thing
she's
to say.
She's got some big thing driving up there for her.
Yeah. But like, so just to wrap, people going through spinal cord injuries or single dads like going through it, what piece of advice can you give?
I think don't be hard on yourself. Understand that you've got an audience member that is probably the most crucial audience member you'll ever have to not only benefit your own life but others and theirs. Just be grateful for what you got. Like don't take advantage of having a kid. Like I'm not saying quit your job like I did, but fuck, it's the best thing I ever did. I've never been so broke in my life, but I've never been – coming out of this side now, I've never been so happy. And I can actually honestly say that. And, you know, it is stressful watching your bank account go very quickly in the first week, but it's okay. We're fine because there's a lot of people off worse off. I've got a roof over my head. He's getting fed every day. We're rocking up to school. We're doing everything that we still do. We don't necessarily can't drive as much as we used to go to because I was driving flat out to motocross tracks for him.
You're a very active dad
But then we've got the boys that allow us to ride at their places and that's a massive help for us. And, you know, I think that most parents just don't be hard on yourself. There is no book to how we be a parent.
No rule book.
But I think the biggest thing is that they watch us way more than we realise. And, like, I'm constantly trying to better myself as not only just a person but a dad. And I'm pretty hard on myself because I'm quite – being a dad on your own up here, I'm quite – especially with a boy, you've got to be pretty hard on them. You've got to be quite structured with them. Otherwise, they'll just take off, whatever
the
what they want
rails.
To do. And I sometimes feel like I'm bad cop a lot, but I always make sure every night that I tell him, mate, I love you so much. I'm proud of you and you're fucking awesome and you're going to kill it at life. Because I know that in between that, we've probably battled a bit and I've been frustrated because he's probably done something that he shouldn't do, that he's smart enough to not do that. But I always make sure that every night he goes to bed, he knows that I'm proud of him, I love him, and the reason why I'm hard on him is because I just want the best out of him. And when you watch them, I forget he's 8.
Oh, you're the sickest dad. I love you, man, and you're the best example of appreciate what you do have and not what you don't have.
Yeah, having you in our lives and our other friends up here has kept us going and, you know, you guys inspire us too and
Thanks so much for chatting to me today, brother. You're the fucking man.
We finally got it out. My headspace was clear enough to be able to talk this time.
If you're listening and you're from a company that needs keynote speakers, you have to fucking hire Josh Wood. I've heard your keynote. I've seen videos.
The Red Bull videos.
Yeah, the Red Bull videos and stuff. Like, it's like people, it's so moving.
Well, the thing is, I never filmed. I hated seeing myself how I am. So, like, when I used to speak, I used to be the first one on the stage so no one saw me walk out, and then I realised I had to change that. I had to love myself again, and that was probably the hardest thing to do, was to learn to love myself again.
Do you mean because you didn't want to walk out with a limp?
Yeah, I was embarrassed by the way I walked, and like, you know, I struggled. Man. I remember when I did the chumps one, and like, I'd been sitting for so many hours, and when I had to walk up, it took like 30 minutes to get from my seat.
But see,
like,
you thought that.
No, you make a joke of it, and, you know, it's sort of like... But now I'm learning to not be so unhinged on myself,
yeah,
and learning to love myself again, and to like myself is probably the biggest thing. And I need to, because if I don't like myself, then my little audience member is going to go, oh, Dad's saying you fucking idiot when he's angry at himself.
Fuck yeah, look at us go. And I'm so proud of you. I'm so glad we finally had this chat, and I want you to keep talking.
No, thank you. Thank you for believing in me.
Setting you a challenge to keep talking. We're going to get you some bookings. You're going to do some keynotes.
We need to get an email first.
You need to get a fucking email address and a manager.
I got rid of everything.
Who wants to manage Josh Wood? I want people to write in, actually just slide into his DMs, because I don't know.
DMs are probably too full from like all these different brands giving you full chocked up.
Maltesers, Kit Kats. No, right. I need you 100% to... They need to slide into your DMs and book you.
No, thank you. I just appreciate having you in our life, because we're very lucky to have you and a lot of other people in our lives, and thank you.
I'm lucky to have you. No, really, we feel that.
I appreciate it.
You're inspiring,
I think,
man.
We've got a big guy over watching us pulling some fair few strings up there. Fuck, he was pretty.
Love you, chump. I know. Isn't he just
I used to tell him all the time, like, fuck,
so
I hate how
hot.
Talented you are. You make
hot,
me sick.
Talented. I know. He fucking pissed me off because I am.
The skin?
He used to just look so young and have the nicest skin and just be so good at everything. And I was like, I can't.
He had a fair glow up, though. We have to bring that up. He had a fair glow up.
Yeah. Well, because I got,
we need to bring him down
I got his hair. Like, he used to have his. Like that emo fringe covering his face,
right.
And I was like, fuck that off. Get your hair off your face because your face is so beautiful. Yeah. Grew his hair long and like
glow. No arrogance,
up.
Though.
Nah, humble ass.
That's what made me sick.
Yeah.
I remember every time like he'd do something, he'd do a new sport or he'd do a new instrument, I'd literally make sure I told him, I'd go, fuck, you make me sick.
I know.
He knew I was joking, but it's like.
I'd always say, fuck, you piss me off how good you are at everything.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
But zero arrogance, which was the best part. Thanks, Elle.
Thanks for bringing us together, chump.
Yeah, I know, right?
Thanks for being a talented bastard.
Still pulling moves.
Oh,
thanks,
love you, Josh,
mate.
But
you
thanks
too.
So much for coming.
Appreciate it. I have to bring the kids in and get them to do their own. They'll just tear everything up, pop balloons.